and welcome to The Freaking Awesome, where we discuss the things we watched, played, and read throughout the week. It's Monday, March 4th, 2024. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today, if you can't find him developing a relationship with a Victorian-era corpse, you could find him and his partner, RG, on YouTube series Date Night. Please welcome John Abaya.
Hey, everyone. I'm just here, 6 feet under, trying to find some corpse to...
6 feet under sounds like a good television series title.
I know. It should be about... I want a television series, like a premiere, premium television series that, like, an hour long that... Maybe it's about a family that works at a morgue. I don't actually know. I'm just like throwing ideas, you know.
Okay, it sounds good. Yeah.
Maybe a dark comedy?
Yeah. I was thinking of one that's called Breaking Bad.
Okay. Yeah. How did you get that?
It's about this teacher. I was like thinking, like, oh, why, what if a teacher is desperate to do something to help his family and himself because he's... needs money for his cancer. What do you call that? Cancer
treatment.
Yeah. So he sells counterfeit trolls online.
Wait, trolls
like the dolls,
the hair, yeah. The long trolls. Yeah.
I'm still working on it.
Yeah, I think the troll thing should be changed.
Yeah. We'll see.
Anyway, more demanding, a more demanding thing, like Pokemon cards, like okay, the rare Pokemon cards.
Yeah. So, how are you, John?
I'm okay. It's March. The madness is happening. I don't watch college basketball, so I don't know actually. But NBA is a whole different thing. I don't know what's going to happen by the end of this month, but hopefully, good things will happen.
Yeah, we'll see. Mostly we see a lot of beams this month. But
We need all those beams.
Yeah, beams. So we have a short episode. We have a couple things in the weekly roundup. We will have a trailer talk. And our main discussion this week, just out on video on demand, you know, such as like Amazon Prime, Vudu, and whatnot. We watch a film from Zelda Williams. I think it's her... directorial debut. It is titled, why am I blanking out? It's titled Lisa Frankenstein. I was gonna say it's also written by Diablo Cody.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that, talking about that. But yeah, before all that, it's trailer talk. This week's trailer is I Saw the TV Glow.
Each episode, they help each other fight a new monster from across the county. But it's way too scary for most kids.
We're gonna defeat him this time. We're gonna need to harness the full potential of our shared powers.
Sometimes the pink opaque feels more real than real life.
Maddie, it was a TV show.
Are you sure that's all it was?
That is a clip of I Saw the TV Glow. It is directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. It's her second feature film. Her first film was like an indie hit among like, you know, horror cult. I'm assuming it's a cult not classic yet, but it is in the rounds of like people who just hasn't discovered it will discover it in streaming platforms. It's titled We're All Going to the World's Fair. I haven't watched it yet. You too, John, right?
No, I haven't ever watched it. Yeah.
I think this is so her new film is now distributed by A24. It looks like it has a higher budget now. Because now I think it's, you know, her name's getting out there and they gave her more money to develop a film. So I Saw the Devil. I Saw the TV Glow. She's written and directed it. So it's also starring Justin Smith. People probably know him, probably popular with the Jurassic World franchise.
For me, it's actually Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, Pokemon. Yeah. He's in Pokemon. And it also stars Bridget Lundy Payne, who I know her. She plays Ted's daughter in the latest, the Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Oh, yeah.
I feel and like, she... yeah.
Yeah. And then I believe, yeah, that's the one I know her from, too. Yeah. That's the only one I can think of. And I think off the top of my head.
Plus, like, you and I really loved her performance there as like she looked, she sounded and like could have been Ted's daughter in real life. Mm-hmm. So the film, this is the SWAT synopsis of I Saw the TV Glow. It's on IMDb. Two teenagers bond over their love of a supernatural TV show, but it is a mysteriously canceled. This movie is going to come out May of this year. It made its round to the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. I think it's going around into other film festivals this year. But yeah, I heard a lot of good things about it. It has this is not like a thing where I look into, but it has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes and a Metacritic score of like 86. So we'll see how it is. But John, what's your thoughts? It feels like something up in our wheelhouse that we would watch.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it looks very interesting. There was a TV show. I forgot what was it. It was about a TV, like, I want to say it's like Channel Zero or something like that. I only briefly watched some of the episodes of it, but it's Channel Zero was a like horror anthology. And I want to say one of them was about this TV show that these kids watch when they were young. I forgot what it was called, but I want to say it's like something Cove or something like that. I don't know. It was like a while ago when the Channel Zero, when I first watched it, like during early pandemic, like 2020. I know the show's like been on for a little bit while, but I think that's the one I'm thinking about. But it was a TV show with like a pirate or something like that. I'm only saying this because I saw the TV Glow has a very eerie premise of that where these kids like remember this TV show they used to watch, and it looks like, I can't tell what is it. It looks like a Saturday morning like Power Rangers type of show. It looks odd, like these are the scenes that looks like shot in the 90s or whatnot, and then but scenes where what do you call that? Like monsters are there. Like yeah, it's like gooey monsters too, like practical monsters, and then. When I saw that, I was like, oh, this is very interesting. But then it has this eerie type of mood with especially like the two main leads with Justin Smith and Bridget. I don't know what they're doing. Like they I don't know if one of them gets stuck in the TV and then one of them has to save them and stuff like that. It's a TV show. It's very mysterious. Like the trailer doesn't really lend into like what the story is about, but we know something about a TV show and these two characters were friends for a while. Remember a TV show. And then I don't even know when they flash back to like other characters. Is that them when they're younger? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was like very interesting the way it shows it. And then there's a part where it looks like one of them goes into the TV. So I'm excited to watch, but I want to watch the previous film that the director made just to get like a glimpse of what the aesthetic they go for. Because, you know, especially in horror, there's like a certain aesthetic you go for all your films. And this one looks like it follows that. Very glowy, like you say. Like
I mean, the neon lights. Yeah.
The neon lights is the thing. Because even the one, if you see images of the previous film that Jane made, what is it called again?
We're All Going to the World's Fair.
Yeah, it's a very neon, like neon-ish. And then this one lends itself to the same aesthetic too with that.
Which is, it looks like it's available on Max, the HBO service, and Prime.
Okay,
and
I'll try to watch that before watching this film.
And it's a cool less than 100 and it's a 100-minute film, so you know, you don't have to, you know, it's not that long of a film. No.
But yeah, I want to watch that.
My thoughts exactly. I love how ambiguous the trailer is, so you don't even know what exactly the plot is. And it's also, refreshing to see new stories taking. It looks like it's both a coming of age film and a horror film. Like we are mixing, you know, bending genres and whatnot together. And I love it when horror does that. Like you could go any direction you want and still, you know, because in the first beginning of this trailer, you think it's like a coming of age.
Yes, yeah.
Usually when the music, there's like a drop of the music where
a wacky little silly song.
So it kind of reminds me of the TV show they're probably watching. It feels like, you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark? But yeah, it's coming out May 3rd. I think we might talk about it in this podcast just because of how and it's also produced by Emma Stone. So Emma Stone is now a producer. One of her first films was a Problemista. It's the one that's coming out.
I don't even know what is that.
Remember, it's with the comedian Julio Torres.
Oh yes.
Emma Stone produced that movie, and now she's producing this one. So it's kind of cool that and she helped produce The Curse too. So it's kind of cool that she is going in these weird, she's producing weirder films that you would think like, oh, but I think after watching Poor Things, you're like, okay, I know why she would want to do this. But she helped produce Poor Things too. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, shout outs to her for just, you know, risking a lot of that, producing credit to really fascinating films. So moving on. We are going to go to our weekly roundup. Continuing on in horror and the undead, John, I'm actually surprised you're still watching the series. Just because how many spin-offs are there? Like seven?
Actually don't know. There's probably at least seven because... Yeah. I haven't even researched how many spinoffs there are, but
it's gone like international too now. So
wait, what? Like, each there's even shows that doesn't even take place in Atlanta anymore.
Yeah, I think it's one of them is in Paris. What's his name? Daryl Dixon.
Yes. I seen. And one is in New York in Dead City.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there's like a YA version called The World Beyond, I think.
Whoa, I did not.
It's called The Walking to the World Beyond, but it's like a bunch of kids, like teenage young adults, going out. And then I think they do an anthology called Tales of the Walking Dead too.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I heard about that.
And I don't know
what Dead that. City.
Yeah, that's the one that's in New York.
Okay.
With seven overall,
it looks like.
The seven? Okay. That's a lot. This one is a new spinoff called The Ones Who Live. I actually don't know why this is made or what made me... Well, I've seen people talk about it on Twitter. The reason why I watched it because I was a fan of when... what's his name?
Andrew Lincoln.
Yeah, Andrew Lincoln and then the one who plays Michonne.
Diane, I can't pronounce her name, sorry.
what was it? Oh, Danaya Gurira. Both of them are the stars of this TV show. And then, Andrew Lincoln.
Danaya Gurira. I'm sorry.
Okay. I remember I didn't even watch the episode where Rick Grimes died. He blew up in the bridge. They do a little recap in the beginning of the episode to let you know what happened previously on The Walking Dead and why this is happening. And then Rick Grimes somehow survived a bridge blowing up, and then he was taken upon this another group of people, and then Michonne was out there trying to find him, and that's it. That's all they show about it. But this one is more about Andrew Lincoln's character, Rick Grimes, where he's in the city, walled off city. That's in the last 5 years he's been there, and then he's working his way into the ranks. He becomes a military person in there. There's a lot of... So there's also a podcast I listen to called We're Alive. A lot of very off similarity. I mean, this is a world where zombies have taken over, and then you know, you have to make groups, and then you walled in city. Everyone does this. Even George Romero does this with The Land of the Living Dead. A lot of people do this type of thing. But this one, because I've watched it because of Rick Grimes, I just want to see his story. They do a really good job of hinting or doing this one thing they do in the comic books they never did in the live action, and they actually did it in the live action. I was kind of surprised. It's, how are they going to fix this? And then they fixed it right away. I won't mention it. It is a surprise for you if you never read the comic books. And then he actually does it. I was like, oh, this is interesting way to do it. I don't know if it's their way of like throwing in stuff that it felt too comic-y in the comic books on the TV show now. And then he's part of this group where they do like missions, secret missions within the world that they get supplies and whatnot. But also the city he's belonged to is one of the last three standing cities in the United States. So they make like a Trinity pack. Their flag is basically like three circles together, like a diagram type of flag. One represents each of the city. I totally forgot what city he's in too. Rick Grimes in. It's near Atlanta. I want to say it's Chicago or Philadelphia.
It says one of those. Oh wait, never mind. It doesn't say on
it. Something. It's somewhere near a body of water. But the other two standings, Oklahoma and Portland. So those are like the other two standing cities that have at least more than like 100,000 people left. So you can say like the United States only have less than 1 million people left, probably. That's out there. But yeah, I watched the first episode. It just premiered over this week. I liked it. Even the person who stopped watching Walking Dead like 10 years ago, it's still interesting. I think I'm more of the Rick Grimes story more. That's why I'm interested more. And it fills in this weird void I have with zombie entertainment, I guess. On TV series. I like the drama of The Walking Dead when it first started. I think it's nice just to have like a huge gap and like what do you call that? I distanced myself from the series, from the comic books and everything, and now I'm returning. And it's like, oh, this is something I would still watch. So I'm just watching it now. I think it's a short series. It's not like meant to be too long. I believe what they mentioned. It's like it's a story about Michonne and Rick Grimes reuniting, and it ends in the way like really cool. And you see Michonne too in the thing. It plays around with narrative storytelling. Like they do these like dream sequence type storytelling that you see sometimes in The Walking Dead, but it plays out here. I don't want to say it's like Lost or anything like that, but nothing like that. But they go back and forth about this like dream sequence he's having versus and then him in the real life. And then yeah, it's nice. There's some surprising parts, some interesting characters that he meets, and then I think a really surprising scene that I think comic book fans will be like, "Oh, that's cool, they did that." but yeah, it's called The Ones Who Live. On AMC right now, part of the Walking Dead universe. Go watch it if you're interested.
It looks like it's six episodes. It looks like they've been doing six episodes for a while now.
Okay.
Instead of doing their 16, 22 episode season.
Yeah. they stopped doing that. I think it's nice to have like this contained 6 hour experience. Not experience, yeah. Whatever you want to call it.
Storytelling, I guess you could
say.
Yeah. Wait, so I don't know if this is spoilers. How did Rick survive?
he fell in the water. So he blew up a bridge and he fell in the water and his body was like with other zombies that are dead.
Okay.
They're not dead. Like they're dead. Like they're not coming back. And then his body floats into like another bank, or you call that like on shore. And then this group of people found him. Basically.
Did he die in like the last season of The Walking Dead? Is that what was happening?
No. It was like in the middle of that series. Oh, so
like there's been several years since you've seen this.
Yeah, those people think he's dead. Like those people who he's lost contact with think he's dead the whole time. So
okay.
I think it's Andrew Lincoln though want a break from the show in real life. This is what I'm assuming, because the show is very demanding. It was every year they were just doing it. As long as 1 million people were watching it, they're just going to keep on making they kept on making that show. I mean, now that 1 million people are maybe split up with all these other shows too. So, I mean, it's their universe, I guess.
Do you AMC know if they still have comics based on
these? No, they stopped that too. Everything stopped. Like the main series stopped and then the comic book stopped. I don't know if they did like a spinoff. I know... What's her name? Has a spinoff before. The one from the video games. Claire. Clementine.
Yeah,
she has a spinoff. Yeah. When she's like a young adult.
Okay. I wonder if they will ever bring her into the games.
I thought, bring her into the movies, you mean, or shows.
Yeah,
right?
Shows. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I always wonder that too. I don't even know if they ever did that.
Yeah, me too. but yeah, you're doing God's work by watching these still. So
I don't know. Am I? I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. So that is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. It just recently premiered a couple weeks ago on AMC. You can watch it on AMC. Oh, it looks like this. Oh, they became producers, the stars now. So that's kind of cool. I like it when the stars become like producers, creators.
They get more pay and more say.
And they
to
control
what
their
want.
Own story now, so they don't have to worry about anything. But moving on to another television show that has multiple seasons now. I watched True Detective. Season 4, which was titled True Detective Night Country. This is a anthology series. Is that what you say? Like where the season itself is a different contained story?
Yeah, that's I mean, that's the thing that's been going on the last like 15 years.
I think it like made popular with the American Horror Story. I think it much popular. This one is created, directed, and written by Issa Lopez. So the first three seasons were also created by like Nick Pizzolatto, but I think they had creative differences, and now Issa Lopez is a new creative front of the show, showrunner and whatnot. This season it starred Jodie Foster and Kaylee Reese, who are the two detectives of the series, and it takes place in Alaska this time. Ennis, Alaska. It's a fictional place in Alaska, but it still has the eeriness of when there was, I think, 40 days of nighttime. That's what's happening here, of night. And that's why it's called Night Country. I don't want to spoil anything too much about the series, other than it has loose connections to the first season, which I feel like you should watch. Because I think the first season is the best season. I've watched season 2 and didn't really have no, like, you know, opinion about it. I thought it was okay. But I never watched season 3. You went as far as season 2, huh, John?
Yes. And that's the one with Vince Vaughn. If it's the one with Vince Vaughn, that's where I stopped and then decided I don't need to watch anymore.
But I think Issa Lopez as a showrunner is taking a unique, she's doing it in a different manner than the first season, even though it has loose connections. It doesn't have like, these are not, you don't have to watch the first season to get anything really, but it just fills up a little bit of context of what certain characters and certain themes that the first season has about spirituality and being an atheist basically, and not believing the spiritual world, but like how, a lot. So this one really connects with, if you're, especially if an indigenous or native American, where there is a connection to the spiritual world, and then how it's like commentary on that. But yeah, I highly recommend it. I think it's also sort of tightropes. You know, you don't know if it is horror, supernatural, or like how the first one, like you're like thinking like, oh, is this killer, a supernatural killer, and that, you know, all this symbolism about like the occult is happening and whatnot. But yeah, I highly recommend. I think Jodie Foster, if you love her, it's cool to see her in this role, because you know her from, like, I think the last role she's in that's similar to this is Signs of the Lamb, and she it's basically like, it feels like that if that character grew up and then was assigned to Alaska, and this is how she would probably act.
That's cool. I think that's a cool idea.
So it feels like a continuation to that. And even Issa Lopez says that's the reason why they wanted Jodie Foster, because they wanted to see if that character, like, what is she doing now? If she had like the opportunity, the Claire, what's her name? Clarice Starling, if that character was like, you know, brought into Alaska. One other actor, her co-star, Callie Reese. I think they, I don't even want to say co-star. I think they share the leads together because they're both fascinating actors and character. Callie Reese is basically a boxer turned actor. But watching her here, wouldn't even think she was like a athlete at all. You think she was just naturally an actor. And I think she does a tremendous job in here. And she's also part indigenous, so she has a connection to the story that I feel like you would not have if you weren't. And I think it's kind of cool that they bring a story similar, a story like this to the television scene. I think we're seeing sort of that like in Rez Dogs on there, but with a comedy. And then now here you have like indigenous crime drama. Which I feel like it's really cool. But yeah, shout out to her. She's super, you know, I want to see her in more things now. Callie Reese. Have you been watching or have you watched it yet, John? Hello?
Sorry, my mic was off. I want to watch it, but I haven't had time to watch it.
It's also 6 episodes, so it's more condensed.
Yeah, it just ended, right? It just ended.
Yeah, yeah. A couple weeks ago, it had its season finale. So
yeah. I want to watch it, and then I heard just good things about it.
Yeah, cool. That is True Detective Night Country, which is on HBO streaming. Highly recommend it. So those are two things you could watch over the 6 episodes, really quick. 6 hours, I guess you could say. But looking forward seeing what everyone else thinks about them. So moving forward to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is Lisa Frankenstein.
I can't do that. Not until we bury the body.
That is a clip from the trailer of Lisa Frankenstein, directed by Zelda Williams, written by Diablo Cody. And this is the IMD premise for Lisa Frankenstein, a coming of rage love story about a teenager and her crush, who happens to be a corpse. After a set of horrific circumstances bringing him back to life, the two embark on a journey to find love. So that is the plot. The premise of Lisa Valentine. that's our sister, Lisa Frankenstein. It's starring Catherine Newton, Cole Sprouse, Lisa Sabrano. How do you say that?
I know she's Filipino, and then
Carla Giacchino too. John, we both rented this on Vudu, on the video on demand. Your thoughts on Lisa Frankenstein?
I was actually really into the trailer when I first watched it. It was cut really well, where it feels like it was like a throwback 80s style film, where it's a young adult type film coming of age, where it seems like Catherine Newton's character was going to revive a corpse and fall in love with him. It is not that. Maybe like, without spoiling it, but yeah, maybe 90% of the film is something else. Like, it's a whole different story that I didn't think about. Like, it is, I don't remember Frankenstein that well, the story itself that
Mary Shelley's
Frankenstein. I even have the book. I haven't even touched it yet because it's a short book too. The only thing I know about Mary Shelley is that this one episode of Doctor Who, she was a character, and it's about that time where she had they were like a stormy night with her friends, and they all had to like come up with a horror story, and that's how she created Frankenstein. That's, I guess, the whole reason or how she made the character and stuff like that. It was like a dare or something like that. That's the only thing I know about Mary Shelley and everything about Frankenstein. I mean, I watched Frankenstein before, the adaptations, the old ones and new ones. I know it's about a doctor named Frankenstein. It creates a creature or monster. Monster goes havoc, and the Frankenstein has to stop it, or something happens. But it blurs. My most latest thing of Frankenstein, I remember, oh God, I want to say it was probably either Monster Squad. That's how I know it more than anything, as this like really not smart monster that does whatever you tell it to do, and that's it. Like, that's all I know, really. So this one, Lisa Frank, Frankenstein, it starts off with like animation that felt kind of off a little bit, but knowing like the budget of this film is very like really indie film, I see why they went for it. It felt like a what's that game? Oh God, the black and white game where he plays a kid that goes through like a factory. Limbo. It felt like a very Limbo-ish type of animation. It's fine. It goes with the film. But then, then you're with the character that Catherine plays. What's her name? Oh, God. I totally forgot her name.
Lisa.
Lisa. Sorry. Her character name is Lisa.
Lisa Swallows, which is
yes, it's an interesting name. Funny enough, they don't really joke about that.
It's a reading joke. Like, you have to read it all the time.
Yeah. But it's odd because people say the name, but no one says anything really about it. And then it's her life with this new family with her dad, and then she's in like a step family that Lisa, that plays Taffy, is the stepsister. And then, what's her name?
Her name Carla. Is Liza Soberano. I just realized.
Liza. That. Oh, Liza.
Yeah.
Liza. Yeah. Carla Gugino as Janet. So she's a stepmother. And they I won't say why they're with this family, but they're with the family. She's starting a new school. Taffy's the stepsister. And she's one of the most supporting characters I've ever seen in the film. It's like, if you have to write someone that's a supporting character, this is it. Like, it plays off or subverts that kind of like you see in other films where you think the stepsister would be mean. But I think Liza does a great job playing as Taffy as like the most straightest.
Like, she's genuinely supportive.
Like, she's the straightest character in the film. Like, straight wise, like everyone else is a little goofy and silly in a weird way. She's playing it straight. Like, she's the typical person that's always worried. Not typical, sorry. The person is lived in reality more than everyone else. It felt like she's caring and she's supportive of every character and stuff like that, and understanding. You feel like, I don't know if it was meant to be, feel like I want to feel more for her than anyone else, because the way Catherine Newton plays Lisa is very like, I do not like this character. Like, this character is a little bit annoying at times, but also her switch to becoming this other type of character in the film later on felt odd for me, because it felt like it just happened. Like, it just all of a sudden happened. And then there's an incident that does happen in the film, and it just felt like she just went for it. That's it. And then Cole Sprouse just plays like an undead Frankenstein character. Yeah, creature. Yeah. It's called the creature in here. Yeah. I think it's fine. Like, he does a good job. I only know him from Riverdale. I know he has like an early life too before Riverdale with what is it, Disney shows and stuff like that
too.
Big Daddy and stuff like that.
Which is I read in a trivia. Remember his nickname was Frankenstein in that movie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even know that was a thing.
But they kept on calling him Frankenstein because he wanted to choose his name. And he's like,
oh, nice. Hey, Frankenstein. He grew up to be Frankenstein. Look at that.
Well, Frankenstein's monster.
Frankenstein's monster. What was the thing that she was drawing, though, in the beginning of the film? So that's not his tomb. That was just another person's tomb. Okay.
That's his tomb.
So his name is Frankenstein then?
Yeah.
That's what I was like. Was this?
It's kind of weird. I don't know why. I think it's just to make sense. Well, that's his last name is Frankenstein.
Yeah. That's why I was like, it was interesting the way they did that. But yeah, and then I say it's a good film. It's a good, but there are times where I was struggling to feel for Catherine Newton's character, Lisa. I was along the line with Taffy more. I don't know if I just felt like I feel bad for her more than anything else, what's happening to what's in this thing. And then it just felt weird for me. Like, I get what they were trying to do with Lisa in the film, but I think she played the whole, like, oh, I'm actually the monster. Not just, it wasn't Frankenstein, or, you know, like, Frankenstein is the monster, not the monster is the monster, right? That's the whole thing. I guess they played that well. It just, I think I wasn't prepared for it. I think I was prepared more of, like, a rom-com type thing. It's a dark humor type film.
It's rated PG-13 too. It's just weird.
It's very dark humor. I mean, they don't show too much stuff, but there are scenes here. I can see this be double billed with Jennifer Body with other Diablo Cody
it's
film.
It's funny you say that, because Diablo Cody says that this is in the same universe.
What?
As Jennifer Body.
I guess with, like, I guess with the whole, like, lightning, right? The whole, the green sky. Wait, was there green skies in Jennifer Body?
I don't remember. I mean, I rewatched it.
I watched that. We watched that last year, too. It's like, I need to rewatch that beginning part then. That's interesting. Did not know that. That's an interesting little factoid.
And then they say that this is not probably the last times you'll see these characters. So.
Oh, nice. I don't mind that. I don't mind if this is like start of a whole new universe.
Yeah.
Why don't we do the mummy and the werewolf? Like, why don't we just redo all these films into like these little YA films? So the other thing too is the aesthetic of the film. It does. It was in between the 90s, 80s, because we were questioning the whole time what era this
was. It is late 80s. You're right. Yeah.
Well, she literally says it's like in the film, it's 1989. That's why it feels like that. It feels very not in the 80s and not in the 90s. It felt like these are certain clothing felt like 90s clothing more than 80s clothing. But the big hair felt like 80s. But they're certain students there that look like they're going far from the like Taffy's character almost looks like going to the 90s. Like, she can be a Power Ranger if she wanted to, like a character in the TV show Power Ranger. I think it's a good movie. I wasn't prepared at all. I probably need to rewatch this just to get it all, but to absorb everything. I think Zelda Williams did a good job. I really like the way it's filmed. It feels like a, you know, dark comedy horror film that I can't wait for her to do other films. She did. For me, Zelda Williams did a really awesome job.
I agree with majority of what you said. I think it is one of those things where, because Zelda Williams is like a first time director, you could see the limits she has in some of like what she's trying to do. Versus like someone like Karen Kusama, the director of Jennifer's Body, where she had like a body of work already before Jennifer's Body. So it's like you could see like the difference there. But I think she handled it well. Like, I think she has, you know, she has her own type of vibe, Zelda Williams, you could tell. And then as for Diablo Cody, I think I found it like charming and funny and weird, but there were many, many times where I felt like the jokes fell flat, because I think there's like this sense of like the jokes were not as like snappy as usually like when in a like Diablo Cody, like think of Juno or Jennifer's Body or what's the other movie? She made one with Charlize Theron, Tully. I don't know if you ever watched Tully.
But I haven't really heard of that.
It's like an adult version of her work, because Charlize Theron is like an adult in there, but it has the same like, you know, snappy humor, you could call it. But yeah, I think everything about the movie is also fun when it comes to like the 80s aesthetic. It doesn't lean too much on it, but it's also, there's some parts where you're like, oh, this is 280s too. So, which is fine. I do agree that Liza Saberano is like, you do feel bad for her throughout the movie because she is very supportive. And I wonder that, yeah, I think they were just trying to subvert those tropes of a character like this, where you would feel like, oh, she would be probably the last person you would kill in this type of scenario.
Yeah, I was going to be super surprised if they were going to do something with her. I was like, don't do anything with her. Yeah, like, yeah.
Especially the last scene. Yeah, like the last scene when there's a reveal and you're like, what will Lisa do to her sister?
Yep, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think she's a good actor. I think this is her first American big budget, like not big budget, but like her first time, because she's well known. And although she's Filipino American, I think she found her stardom in the Philippines, in a lot of production in the Philippines, where she stars a lot of Filipino movies and whatnot, like TV dramas and whatnot. That's what I've read. But other than that, like, this is her first Hollywood debut. Oh yeah, it is her first Hollywood debut. But yeah, she's great. One person I want to highlight that I feel like, I was like, oh, this person reminds me of Brad Pitt, a young Brad. Yeah,
yes. Is, literally when we were talking about it, that guy, the mannerisms of his voice, I don't know if they were resembling that, but it was Brad Pitt.
Probably. I could see like the Thelma Louise type of Brad Pitt that they're going for. Eckenberry. He plays Michael in the movie, where he does feel like this heartthrob. Like, they perfectly cast him sort of like this Brad Pitt lookalike at the time. But yeah. So yeah, I don't really have a lot. I think Catherine Newton does a good job too. I don't think she's not horrible, but I think there is this sense, like, I feel like it's the delivery of some of the jokes that it doesn't hit always. Yeah. But I think it's one of those movies where if you watch it side by side with Jennifer's Body, I feel like there's like you'll love it more just because how it's a continuation of that. So yeah, shout out to like Diablo Cody and Zelda Williams. Taking a female writer's work, and then now they're also female creators and giving it another voice too. I think that's really cool, because I think a lot of the people who adapt Mary Shelley is like Frankenstein, I think they it's mostly male, so this is kind of cool to see it in a woman's eye.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is
there was something you mentioned earlier in the text message thing.
We're gonna do that in spoilers really quick.
Okay.
So we could go to Spidey spoilers. John, you want to mention it?
Oh yes, I didn't. I noticed it, but I didn't even put two together. Is the suspenders that who's wearing it? Lisa, right?
No, it was it was the creature.
Oh, okay. I was wearing the Mork suspenders and from Mork and Mindy. That's a good catch. I didn't even think about that.
When I nearly saw that, I was like, oh, that's Mork and Mindy's. That's Mork's suspenders. And then I read it afterwards. It's, this is a little nod.
If the listeners don't know, Zelda Williams is the daughter of Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I think we didn't mention that.
And then she got the name from the video games.
Yes. So there's literally, you can find a commercial of Robin Williams explaining why he named the daughter Zelda Williams. It's a commercial paid by Nintendo.
Robin Williams, may he rest in peace. He was a huge video game. He's a gamer, basically.
In
the early 90s stuff. You could see him constantly. There's like photos. If you search him playing video games when in between setups and movies, where he just wants to be in this trailer playing video games. I was like, interesting. I think there's a photo of him playing that, what is it called? Night Trap? Is it Night Trap? You played it recently, didn't you, John? Is it called
No. I know of the game. Yeah. It's that, what do you call that? FMV type.
Yeah. There's a photo of him playing that in between. I forgot which movie it was. I think it's like, it has to be an early 90s movie, but I forgot which movie it was. But yeah, I can't wait for her to see her other directorial stuff. Like, I think she has an eye, and I'm curious like what she will have.
What if she directs the Legend of Zelda movie?
That's pretty cool.
Just throw it out there.
Yeah, that's a 360. I mean, I could see it if they give her the responsibility to do all that.
What if they have this like relationship, close relationship with Nintendo? It's like, you know what? We'll give you Nintendo, or not Nintendo, The Legend of Zelda. I more likely it will be an animated series. I don't know if they're still in production with what was it? Netflix, I guess.
Like, yeah,
5 years ago they announced something where they're trying to make a Zelda series. Not sure if that's
going on. It's weird. Oh, she did like a short films. I just saw right here. She's made a horror. They're mostly horror films. That she made a short film called Kappa Kappa Die.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Yeah, me too. I don't even know where you could find this. It's a I can't find it. Oh, it's a 45-minute film. Looks interesting. But yeah, is there anything else for Spidey spoilers you have?
No. Well, so yeah, like the scenes where he basically kills Janet, the mother of Lisa, then that's where it got kind of odd for me, because the way the reaction of Lisa is like just switched to like, oh yeah, we're doing this now, let's do it, like that. And it's odd. And she does explain like, it was your fault to the creature, like you killed Janet, it was your idea, but my idea, yeah, it was to kill the boy that was like sexually harassing her, or abuse, or not sexually, like almost molesting her, basically. In that scene, you know where that
comes from? That scene is from what's that? It's an older movie, Mommy Dearest. You ever watch that movie?
No, I know. Yeah, I've heard of it, but I never knew that's.
Yeah, that's where that scene with Janet and Lisa comes from. Is when she slaps her. Faye Dunaway movie. It's a Faye Dunaway.
Okay, I think I've seen scene of that, but
yeah, a lot of people make fun of it.
Yeah. But yeah, and then
it's a hanger scene. If you ever.
Oh. No, I don't know. I think I've seen something about it or mentioned about it in other podcasts. The other thing too is when Lisa finds Taffy and whatever that guy that looks like Michael. Brad Pitt in bed, and the scene following after that, and maybe like, why is he doing that? Why is the creature going to cut off his penis? And it's just, oh, the creature doesn't have a penis. And
then yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's why. There are funny scenes there, like when Lisa's explaining what a massager is to the creature. Well, and that was really well done.
Like that, where you have like the douchebag. Cause, like,
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a scene that says Aunt Flo, where...
Yep, yeah. I think they do a good job of not straying away. Like, we've seen teen comedies where they don't do this in the boy perspective, right? But it's nice to see a teenage girl perspective of how to do a comedy with her jokes. Like, those are her jokes that she can make about herself, and it's still funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's good. It reminds me a lot of Weird Science too. Weird Science.
Oh yes, I could see that.
Like, actually, bring something to life.
Yeah,
and trying to hide it.
That's like the boy's perspective, because it's like,
this one's a girl's perspective. Yeah. More horror though than Weird Science.
Yeah, I totally see that. Actually, I never even thought about that until you mentioned it. There's a connection between those two films.
Yep. Yeah. There was another movie. It was like Weird Science and something else. Well, it almost felt like Gina Davis too. Like Lisa was trying to be like Gina Davis in this odd way.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying to be like these 80s icon, like with Brad Pitt and stuff. I think Taffy does a great job of just doing a whole different character that you don't really see in the 80s. And if you see the 80s.
Play like that lady in like, I forgot her name, from Gremlins.
I forget her name.
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah,
she has Cates, like that Phoebe Cates type of
very optimistic character.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Watch what do you call it? Gremlins 2.
Oh, really, that's good. A good scene with her like thinking about Christmas again.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's good. Go watch it, everyone. $20 right now on renting.
Yes, $20. And probably even in a couple of months, it's actually going to be in one of those streaming surfaces somewhere.
I would say whatever Universal is working with, whatever streaming, it's Universal film. So whatever Universal is,
I don't know which one is it right now.
I want to say it's Peacock. No, is it Paramount? I don't know. I don't actually know. Where are all the monster movies at? Where are all like the Dracula?
Universal. And- oh yeah, yeah. I have no idea now. Where? I would say it is Peacock. It is Peacock.
Isn't it funny that Universal just has like a whole monopoly of those type of monster movies where they can only the ones who can make those films?
This is, well, see, I wonder if she's purposely phoning in, not phoning in Liza Soberano, Phoebe Cates, because Phoebe Cates is also Chinese, Filipino, and American. Like she's mixed with the same thing with her, that her character. That's why.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I was just researching it because it's like, yeah, it is kind of like Phoebe Cates' character, or the character she plays. But yeah, that is Lisa Frankenstein. Please watch if you can. But yeah, that is our main discussion. John, where can they find you online?
You can find myself on.
Herbs and ammo.
Well, .com. I forgot to mention that. So yeah, I've been playing Code Veronica, Resident Evil Code Veronica. I have to tell everyone, this game is such a frustrating game. I played maybe like 12, 13 hours, and then I just ended, I thought I ended the game, but it's like, end of part one. I was like, end of part one? I just played like 13 hours of this game. This is just part one of the game. So there's a part two that I'm trying to slog my way through. Not as bad as the
part. Do you know how many parts there are?
I don't know. It felt like it was ending because it felt like I just did a boss battle that took me forever to kill the boss. And then you go check all that out on the YouTube page, either at datenightplays.com or the other one I just mentioned. Right now, those are the only videos that we have, but I think I'm having fun. It's just a very frustrating game. It's the most frustrating Resident Evil game I ever played.
You can find me on social media platforms like Instagram, Threads, sometimes on Twitter. I don't wholly out there, but yeah, I'm trying to watch NBA basketball and movies and whatnot. But yeah, just find me there. You can find all of us at thefreakingawesome.com, where you could listen to past episodes and become a patron for no less than $1, which helps us with the cost of running this website and podcast. If you can't do any of that, please support us by just listening, subscribe, recommending, rating, leave a comment on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. And follow us on our Instagrams and or X. I keep on saying, X, Instagrams, and Threads at TFA Now. And but yeah, that's it for now. You can contact us in our old email because I don't know how that email works now. But
it won't work.
Yeah. Also, I want to thank CRSA Chow for producing. Thank you for the listeners. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been The Freaking Awesome.